DW Africa Link. Hello, it's Tuesday, the 4th of September. A very warm welcome to Africa Link. I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to drop your comments there and we will read them live here on air.
Coming up on the show, the top court in the Democratic Republic of Congo has excluded former vice president and main opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba from standing for election after he appealed an earlier decision by the Electoral Commission to exclude him from the ballot paper.
It's a very poor situation for the opposition because they are quarreling all the time. They don't manage to choose a unique candidate.
Cameroon's youngest presidential candidate, Cabral Libby, has said he's ready to take on incumbent President Paul Biya and unite the country that has been deeply divided along language lines.
Il faut la révolution linguistique au Cameroun.
Still now, there are two official languages, English and French. But Cameroon has at least 250 languages. These national languages must be taught in primary, secondary, and university so that we can stop distinguishing between those who speak French and English.
These stories plus lots more coming up later on the show, but let's first go for the news in brief.
I am Zipporah Nyambura with DW News. China has rejected claims that it is behind the increasing debt burden in many African countries as it wrapped up the two-day China-Africa summit in Beijing. Leaders attending the forum agreed that China would increase value-added exports to Africa in order to balance trade relations since it is often accused of dumping low-quality goods. President Xi Jinping also promised to write off the debts of some African countries, including several of the poorest.
China and Africa cooperation is part of the international cooperation with Africa, which has continuously insisted on a win-win strategy and to be open and inclusive. We hope the international cooperation partners can learn from and share experience with each other, play their advantages and create synergy, and jointly make contributions to Africa's peace and development.
Former Democratic Republic of Congo warlord Jean-Pierre Bemba has denounced the upcoming presidential election as a parody after the country's top court banned him from contesting. Bemba is one of the six presidential hopefuls who have been barred from vying in the December 23rd polls. The Constitutional Court upheld the ban on appeal, saying he was ineligible due to his conviction at the International Criminal Court, ICC, for bribing witnesses at his war crimes trial. German left-wing politicians have officially launched a cross-party populist movement called Stand Up to counter the rise of xenophobic far-right, especially in east of the country where foreigners have been targeted in attacks. Leader of the socialist far-left party, Die Linke, Sarah Wagenknecht, said the new alliance aims to address concerns of the poor and win back working-class voters who have drifted to the far-right.
Die sozialen Spaltungen sind tiefer geworden.
The social divisions have become deeper, the climate is becoming rougher, it is becoming partly more aggressive, and cohesion is being lost. If any further impulse was needed, then I think events in Chemnitz have clearly shown that it cannot go on like this and that we urgently need a new political beginning.
There has been a spate of violent far-right protests in Chemnitz triggered by the brutal stabbing of a 25-year-old German man allegedly by two migrants from Iraq and Syria. At least 30 people drowned when a boat carrying at least 150 migrants from Africa capsized off the coast of Yemen, officials said. Some of those aboard the vessel were Somali migrants reportedly trying to make their way to oil-rich Gulf countries. Police in Nigeria say 19 people have been killed, 12 others injured, and scores of homes burned down in the latest violence between farmers and herders in Central Plateau State. The incidents occurred in Lopadet Dweidu and Barakin Ladi District. Plateau has for years suffered tit-for-tat violence between nomadic herders and farmers over land and water, a crisis that has now taken an ethnic and religious dimension. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
This is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr. Don't forget to join us live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I already see Utareka Alex. You say you're listening from Kigali. And keep joining the live show.
And to you, the listener, don't be surprised. We have new stingers, new jingles, new everything. It's like Africa Link has shed off its old skin. Rebranded and reloaded, you know. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for the jingles that we have on this show. How about you, Eddie?
I'm definitely looking forward to hearing them.
So stay there and see how they sound. They're really on the point with a typical Africa beat. Now, we begin the program in the DRC, where the top court has excluded former vice president and opposition leader Jean-Pierre Bemba from standing for election because of a witness tampering conviction at the International Criminal Court. Jean-Pierre Bemba had been tipped as one of the potential replacements for President Joseph Kabila.
In a broadcast on national television, the court ruled that the Election Commission was right in cancelling Bemba's candidacy in September, as further explained by the head of DW's French department, Dirk Kopp.
Before the decision of the Constitutional Court, it was the Electoral Commission who said that Bemba wouldn't have the right to go to the elections because of his conviction of witness tampering by the ICC. And when you have been convicted for corruption in the DRC, you can't go to the elections to be a president.
In this assessment, there's no questioning why the court banned him then.
That depends on whom you ask, because Bemba's party, the MLC, had reacted immediately and had said that the Constitutional Court was not independent. It was rather at the disposal of the government, that it was in fact the government's decision, because they wanted to get rid of a good candidate. Because Jean-Pierre Bemba is one of the candidates who had the best chances against the candidate of the ruling party.
Katumbi is also not going to be contesting. So what does this mean to the opposition now?
That's right. Because as you said, there is another candidate, Moïse Katumbi, who had been barred from the elections, who can't run neither. So I think it's a very poor situation for the opposition because they are quarreling all the time. They don't manage to choose a unique candidate.
Is there ever that possibility that now that this ruling has come out, that they may really want to come together to form a stronger position?
I don't think so. They are so divided that I'm convicted that they won't manage to choose a unique candidate.
Kabila, of course, is not going to be standing. He's thrown his support behind Emmanuel Ramazan Shatari, who is a member, of course, of Kabila's People's Party for Reconstruction and Democracy, to succeed him as president. How much support does he have?
Mr. Shadari does not have so much support, not even in the ruling party. There are rumors that himself, he learned about his candidature only the same morning as Kabila announced him to be his successor. And Mr. Shadari, who is a former interior minister, is under sanctions of the European Union because of the violation of human rights, because of the repression of opposition members, because of the repression of activists. And I think this will play a big role in the fight of the opposition against Shadari.
I was speaking to the head of DW's French department, Dirk Kopp.
Now, we asked you on our Facebook page whether you think he may have influenced the court decision in support of his chosen candidate. That's about Joseph Kabila. And Marco Dax says he may have influenced the court on that decision, as we know how these African leaders behave when leaving power.
Well, Mutanyawana Eriab says definitely. Kabila knows that if Bemba wins, then he might be convicted for the crimes done during his tenure.
Yeah, keep those comments flowing and we'll always read them whenever we can live here on air. Now, let's go to Asia for a while. To Japan, where a heavy typhoon has hit the country, killing at least 6 people. That's according to local media reports, with more than 160 injured. More than 1.6 million households remain without power in Osaka.
Japan has been struck by various weather-related disasters this summer. The current typhoon called Yebi is already the season's 21st storm of its kind. Tapia Goppelt with the latest on the situation in Japan.
Typhoon Yebi has rattled Japan. The country's strongest typhoon in 25 years tore across the west of the country earlier on Tuesday. The heavy storm ripped scaffoldings and sheetings away and toppled trucks and cars. The typhoon caused big waves at the coastline and brought heavy rainfalls, leaving some areas flooded. About 3,000 people are stuck at Kansai Airport after a large tanker crushed a bridge that connects the airport with the city. Authorities are urging more than 1 million people to evacuate to safer areas. Over 2 million households are without electricity. Here's a resident affected by the typhoon.
If there are more damages again, I don't know if the residents will be able to recover from that.
This year, Japan has already faced heavy rainfalls followed by deadly landslides and floods. More people were killed when a heat wave of above 40 degrees Celsius seized the country immediately after the rain catastrophe.
Tabia Coppelt with that report.
Now, Cameroon heads to the polls in just over a month, that's October 7th, 2018, against the backdrop of a bitter dispute between Anglophone and Francophone regions that is bordering on a civil war. But one presidential hopeful says he has a plan to ease his country's tensions.
He's in Europe to talk about it and to remind Cameroonians abroad that they too have a say in their country's future. Here's Pacinthe Matar with this report from Cabral Libby's campaign stop in Berlin.
In a Berlin hotel, over 100 Cameroonians pack into a crowded conference room to see their country's youngest presidential candidate, Cabral Libby. He is in Germany to court millions of diaspora voters and to raise funds for his campaign. Cabral Libby plans to unseat current President Paul Biya, who has been in power since 1982.
J'ai 38 ans, j'incarne une nouvelle génération qui correspond le mieux.
I'm 38 years old. I represent a new generation that reflects Cameroon's demographic. 64% of the population is under 45 years old. That's the reality. We are in an environment where we have seen a 36-year reign of one person that has suffocated the population. We have to set ourselves free of this. We are convinced that in 5 years, because our plan is a 5-year plan, that Cameroon will have a new face. I'm a candidate because the people asked me to run. I consider myself the candidate of the people.
Donc je me considère aujourd'hui comme le mandataire du peuple, comme le candidat du peuple.
There's a lot at stake in Cameroon's upcoming elections. Mr. Libby outlines his plans to fight corruption, improve healthcare and education. But the question on everyone's mind in the room was how he's going to resolve the conflict between Anglophones and Francophones that has boiled over into violence.
J'y suis allé, je l'ai vu. C'est une guerre. Il faut dire les choses comme
elles. I have seen it with my own eyes. It's a war. We have to call it what it is. You have on one side the Cameroonian army trying as much as it can to ensure security. Then you have fighters who are hiding in the forest and who emerge to mount attacks on the army and anyone who tries to exert authority. It's a very serious situation. You have complete villages empty. It has to stop.
Il faut que ça s'arrête.
The presidential hopeful has 4 steps to end the conflict, which he sees as not a separatist one, but as a fight for more autonomy. He calls for more dialogue, for reforming the state to give more autonomy to each of the country's 10 regions. And he adds,
Il faut la révolution linguistique au Cameroun.
We need a linguistic revolution. Till now, there are 2 official languages, English and French. But Cameroon has at least 250 languages. These national languages must be taught in primary, secondary, and university so that we can stop distinguishing between those who speak French and English. And lastly, we have to disarm.
Quatrième mesure, le désarmement, évidemment.
Mr. Libby vows to keep on fighting for a better Cameroon and says he is confident that he will win the next elections come October 7th.
Pacinthe Matar with that report.
DW. Made for Minds.
And that's another new one, Made for Minds. Indeed, DW. Eddie, that's a good one as well.
I love that. Definitely Made for Minds.
Welcome back to the program. In case you just joined us, I am Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Isaac Mgabia, also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we'll be hearing what makes Uganda one of the best electricity regulators in Africa.
Nowadays, there is no load shedding, and we do appreciate that, because now we know there is constant power, right? During the whole day, the whole night, businesses are moving on well.
Well, Eddie, it's good that now Uganda has come back in the news for the good reasons, not for the bad reasons, like we've been reporting about.
Definitely.
Bobby Wine, isn't
it? Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, traditional dishes to tempt your palate and a bill that allows you to dip into your digital wallet. Kenya has joined the bandwagon of Africa's growing businesses that allow the use of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin to make business transactions.
To know more about how cryptocurrency works in Kenya, DW contributor Thelma Mwachanya visited a restaurant in Nyeri district where diners can use Bitcoin to pay for their meals.
Betty's Place restaurant is nestled in a corner of the main street in Nyeri Central Business District. Like other restaurants in the area, at Betty's restaurant, diners can use all the available mobile money transfer to pay for their meals. The exception, though, is at Betty's restaurant, you also use Bitcoin. Beatrice is proud that her restaurant is moving along with global trends like the use of Bitcoin for transactions.
You can come here, eat, drink, and then you pay us via Bitcoins. Yeah, we have our own wallet as a restaurant where once a customer comes, they pay through our restaurant wallet, and they pay via Bitcoins. Yeah. You know, we are evolving. That's where we are moving. The country and also the world is moving to cryptocurrency. And so the technology is changing.
But how does it exactly work? To pay at Betty's Place, you need what is called a blockchain wallet. That is an app that lets you store, send, and receive digital money. You will also need an email address, as David Muraguri Maina, an accountant at Betty's Place restaurant, explains.
Well, you use the email address, we attach it to the one who has Bitcoin wallet. Then after attaching, you put it in Kenya shillings. It will confirm itself automatically to Bitcoins. If, for instance, you have consumed 500 shillings, if you put it in 500 shillings, it will confirm to Bitcoins that is 0.0005 automatically. Yeah. Then if you put an email address, you set it 650,000, one Bitcoin. You indicate them according to blockchain, what is blockchain, true, all that. For those who are interested to know more about Bitcoins. Yeah. We should have seminars for them here at Betty's Place.
It may sound like a good idea and tempting to use Bitcoin at Betty's restaurant. But recently, the Central Bank of Kenya cautioned Kenyans about Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. Nyale Yanga is a financial consultant in Nairobi, and this is his understanding of the general mood about cryptocurrency.
So in Kenya currently, of course, you would have seen the Central Bank of Kenya and even the Capital Markets Authority issued statements indicating that these are very speculative assets and warning the public who are trading these assets to take care because there is no legal framework. Depending on the age bracket of the people you talk to, there are those who are not scared, especially the youth, the young. People who are techno-savvy, they go for these assets. If you talk to the older generation, they'll be very calculative in terms of whether they want to venture into cryptocurrencies or things like those.
That was Thelma Mwajaya with the report.
Now, Eddie, someone called Anjo Eugene Apong, he's in Cameroon. He says, what is the situation with Bitcoin? I mean, after that report on Bitcoin. He says accounts are all $0 for everyone in Cameroon. Is it global? Looks like everyone has gone into a loss using Bitcoin. Anyway, don't go away. We still have much more stored for you. Stay around.
Africa on the move.
Yes, another of our new openers, Africa on the Move. On this note, Ruteka Alex in Kigali says, it's all wonderful. He's talking about our new jingles, Eddie.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, Uganda has been ranked as one of the best electricity regulators in Africa by the African Development Bank. According to the 2018 Electricity Regulatory Index report, African governments, including Uganda, have made tremendous strides in recent years in developing robust regulatory frameworks.
15 countries were chosen for the mini-survey, and among them were Nigeria, Ghana, Tanzania, Namibia and South Africa. The Electro Regulatory Index aims to measure the level of development of an African country's electricity regulatory sector based upon industry best practice. From Kampala, Frank Yiga sent this report.
Sarah Odoi uses hydroelectricity to light her home and various electric appliances like television and the microwave. She tells me she accounts for every power unit consumed because she knows how to manage it.
I put electricity in my hands, I manage. If I know that if I use the microwave for a long time, it takes a lot of electricity, I minimize to use that so that I can save. You can actually put the fridge on during daytime. At night, you switch it off. Energy savers, which you can use from out for security, don't really consume a lot of power, and yet they actually give massive light. It has helped me as a person, really, to manage my house, because I know when I have like 5 units left, I know what I should turn off and what I should keep on.
I spoke to Charles Igeme, who has a and publishing house in the outskirts of Kampala. He's grateful to the government for the 24/7 power availability that runs his business.
Nowadays, there is no load shedding, and we really do appreciate that, because now we know there is constant power, right? During the whole day, the whole night, businesses are moving on well. However, we have challenge of the high tariffs. We are being overcharged.
Despite these achievements, customers often complain about the high electricity tariffs. But David Barunji of Umeme Uganda Limited, the country's main electricity distribution company that maintains and retails power, such customers are simply misguided.
The end users always complain about bills, and you'll find it world over, because they have a history of subsidies, and subsidies have long been removed in most energy markets. So the job we have is to educate our users on energy efficiency. Buy the most efficient electrical appliances, they use them with the restraint. We develop the mobile application that allows the user to key in all his appliances, including a phone charger, and be able to calculate how much power do I use per day.
Uganda Electricity Generation Company Limited is contracted by the government to generate more energy and ensure all power stations are up and running. Simon Kasiate, the communications manager, tells me more electricity megawatts are going to be generated.
We are also looking at an energy mix. So we are looking at developing potential in solar, geothermal, and nuclear, which is also another clean source of energy. Our mandate, therefore, has since evolved to include the acquisition, the development, the operation and maintenance of generation facilities for electricity. We ensure that we are producing to meet the demand of electricity.
Frank Yiga sent this report.
Now, Eddie, what caught my attention in that report is the gentleman who has a printer and publishing, you know, company, who's happy that there's no more load shedding.
Well, for sure. I mean, Isaac, I'm from Ghana, and Ghana for some time has had a situation with load shedding, where there were a lot of power cuts, caused a lot of, damaged a lot, basically, the economy and all. And so you don't want to have load shedding. That's not something you want to be proud of in saying. So that's very good that Uganda is not facing this.
Exactly. You know? Myself being born and raised and bred in Uganda, load shedding was part of life.
It was quite normal.
You are in the middle of a very nice cartoon as a child, you know, you that after the nap, you know, the afternoon nap, you know, you've had your evening tea and you're looking at this cartoon and all of a sudden, boom, electricity off.
No warning.
When is it coming back? No idea.
No one knows. And it's not so good. It's not good at all.
So load shedding really, I think that many we've had, you know, from him that, you know, he's happy that his company is doing well because there is no load shedding. Anyway, let's give big ups to our followers on Facebook. Ibrahim Barry says he's live from the UK. And we have a request, Eddie, I don't know whether you're going to take it from there. He says his name is Agbol Gilbert. He's wondering whether we can request an interview with the president of Cameroon, Paul Biya.
Well, we can say we can try the best we can, but yeah, we'll probably give you updates later.
Why not? Stay around. We still have much more for you in store.
Focus Europe.
Now, in this segment, Focus on Europe, as you've heard in our beautiful new opener, it deals with topical issues in Europe that are of interest to you wherever you are in Africa and elsewhere in the world. Now, it's not about being left-wing or right-wing. It's about doing the decent thing. That's how the lead singer of one of Germany's best-known rock bands, Die Toten Hosen, described last night's concert against racism in the East German city of Chemnitz. In recent days, if you're not aware, the city of Chemnitz has been a congregation of right-wing groups protesting against the country's migration policy.
Leaders have spoken out against populism and the far-right groups, and it was the musicians' turn to add their voice as well. The musicians said they wanted to send a signal after the violence that followed last week's anti-migrant protest in the city. Tens of thousands of people turned out to watch the concert. Christopher Springate has more.
Wir sind mehr, there are more of us. That was the motto of as liberal Germans responded to calls to stand up against far-right racism. Before the concert got underway, there was a minute of silence for the 35-year-old whose fatal stabbing unleashed a week of anti-migrant protests. The mood was peaceful, albeit with a clear message to the racist mobs who've shocked the country, with thousands chanting Nazis out. Several well-known German bands have been playing in Chemnitz, including local group Kraftklub, the driving force behind the concert, as the group's singer explained at a press conference earlier in the day. After all this rubbish happened, we called friends on Tuesday evening and asked them if they would join us for the concert. Within 12 to 24 hours, everyone had said yes. Everyone was just getting in touch with everyone else, and then all these people here agreed to join the concert. The lead singer of one of Germany's most popular rock groups, Die Toten Hosen, explained his motive for taking part. It's essential that we're clear that this is not about a fight between left and right. Everybody who is in any way decent, and it doesn't matter what political beliefs you have, should oppose a radical right-wing mob that attacks people. Few people at the Chemnitz concert would disagree with that. Their city has put on a different face today, with thousands united in a fun-loving show of music and tolerance.
And that was Christopher Springate with that report.
Now, let's go to Cameroon before we wind up this edition. We asked on our Facebook page whether you think the President Paul Biya is an authoritarian. And Intong Ivonyo said, this is not an opposition leader, talking about the guy we had on our show, the opposition leader we had on our show, Libri, says, he is just there as a shadow. These are some of the fellows that are looking for international jobs and are simply there to upgrade their CVs.
Isaac, an even interesting comment is from Paul Oeze, who says, he's BS agent. Soon he won't say a word after an appointment must have been given to him. Cameroon is yet to have real politicians, he adds.
And Tujul Hambo says, all opposition parties, you can fool people for some time, but you can't fool everyone all the time.
Well, Don Akam adds that, saying, Cabral Libi looks hungry. The government of Paul Biya will feed him to grow big.
Oh, that's not a good one. Yeah, I mean, I think because he's still young and some people really know that Paul Biya is surrounded by old cronies. Mm-hmm. So they might think that he's someone who has to build their CV and then, you know, move on. Who knows? Yeah.
Which is challenging, Isaac, for me to understand, because on the one hand, many are expecting the youth to take up such positions. Then the youth come and then there's also a problem. But I think it's all about his readiness and he seems pretty hungry to cause some change. But only time will tell, of course.
Yeah. And Defoe says, for here, I don't care who's to serve Cameroon. My problem is change, continuous change of power, and free and fair election. I think that's fair enough, you know, from him. He's in Cameroon, Yaounde. We really appreciate your contribution of the show. We really thank you for having part of it. And on behalf of our production crew behind there and the rest of the Africa Link team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
I am Eddie Micah Jr.
Bye for now.